to think we're beholden to the people. And each and every day, that's our mission.
Your community voice. Every morning. Kevin Miller.
This program is about you. Standards, ethics, values, faith, family, freedom. That's what it's about here for us.
In for Kevin Miller, it's the host of Money Matters, Dave Pezzo, on KIDO Talk Radio, 107.5 FM and 580 AM.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. And thanks to Kevin. I'm Dave Pezzo, sitting in for our own Kevin Miller. So it's an honor, obviously, to be able to do this for Kevin. But I wanted to say, you know, it's just something else. You think about how Kevin delivers a program every single day. That's tough to do, to come up with content and think about and try to make it interesting, and that he does. What a super professional, just a great professional he is. Hopefully he's having a great day with his family. And again, thank you, Kevin, for the opportunity to do this. And again, if I can roll that into a bigger picture, too. Again, I cannot stress enough what an honor it's been to be doing radio in this valley for over 30 years. I mean, the idea that people care what I think about anything, I know primarily finance, but for 30 years is really, thank you. You honor me with that. You've helped me grow. You've helped make me think at a different level when you have to try to figure out how to talk about things in a way that people can understand. Finance is difficult. Economics are difficult. It's hard to understand for most people and to be able to try to bring that down to a level where people can follow and understand. It changes. It has changed me. So thank you for that. All right, enough of that nonsense. We have got the most patient guy in the whole world. Jim, thank you for hanging on. Please go right ahead.
Morning, Dave, and Merry Tuesday morning.
Merry Tuesday morning, absolutely.
Anyway, at 6:30, you know, I called in, and your call screener, I guess, where am I?
Yes.
Said, you know, you were having a guest. Would I call back the next hour? So I hung up, and I called back immediately, and I told him I'd hang on.
Yeah.
And he said, for 30 minutes, you know, your battery will go dead unless you've got a landline. And I said, yes, I do have a good phone. And my own comment, fruit that I eat is apple. The phone that I use is Sears. But anyway, it's a landline.
I did not know. I didn't even know that Sears had a phone.
Well, they had one maybe, 20, 25 years. That's how long I've had this.
Yeah.
So, and it's still working nicely. So, but as far, you know, as far as the, medical reform?
Yeah.
You know, quick comment. That not really why I called in, but the Republicans' heart, collectively have never been in that. If it was, they would have come up, with something when Hillary did at the beginning of the 90s. The Republicans, their hearts just aren't in it. And so, I mean, they're going to have problems. They were forced to do it by the Democrats.
Right.
And so, but anyway, you said economics is really complicated, and it is. I shall try to boil it down, I think. Economics of every country on the planet, I think, comes down to like three things: productivity, taxes, and efficiency. Now, in a capitalist society, productivity pretty much takes care of efficiency. But you've got taxes, right? Okay,
right.
Then comes the old the feeling of, are we getting what we're paying for? And you might remember, I remember from day one that I can remember, the old expression, good enough for government work. Have you ever heard that?
I have heard that.
Well, anyway, you know, and that just means, you know, with the government, nobody's
efficient.
Right.
Productive.
Nobody's forcing them to do that. There's no incentive for them to be efficient.
Right.
So.
Good point. No, there isn't. You're right. And there is no incentive in government. It's there isn't any incentive for people to work harder. They can't. It's kind of the old union trap, if you will, where you just don't have high productivity or people pushing really hard. There's pressure not to, because it makes other people look bad.
But, you know, you go with the union, I remember listening to a radio show once years ago, and this guy called in, blue collar, I guess a union guy, and he put it simply. He said, the Democrats used to be for the working man. Now they're for the non-working man. And that's exactly what's happened.
Boy, that's well said. That's a very good point. That's a
I think, you know, a lot of the, I guess you could call them, blue dog Democrats.
They were called blue dog Republicans, or Democrats. They were Reagan Democrats, yeah. And now Trump.
Yeah, and I don't know. With Trump, he's a phenomenon. But then again, see, I never watched The Apprentice. I think that kind of crap on TV is ridiculous. So, to me, this is a strange new planet, new world. But
I like this one better. At least we've embraced something that's out of the ordinary.
You know what's amazing? If not, well, you can't really compare Trump to something like the New York Mets, right? The New York Mets came up. They were losers, and they became winners. Well, Trump is a phenomenon. I mean, nobody would ever consider him a loser. Everybody seems to be against him, and yet he's just, you know.
Plows ahead.
Yeah. It's like Teflon. I mean, whatever they throw at him,
he just
goes.
Yeah. And that's something also that people came to admire. I'm one of them. I mean, in the end, I thought it was a joke. And then all of a sudden, I'm sitting there watching TV in the debate, and he's still on stage. They're getting smaller. There's fewer of them on the Republican side. And I remember going, wow. And this guy he's going to win.
But see, the thing is, he is the Don Rickles of politics. Now, I personally, and I think a lot of us, do not like insulting people. And he would insult whoever they were.
Yeah.
You know, Cruz. You know, you kind of wonder about some of these people, if they've sold their soul to the devil. You know, Trump puts down Cruz like mad, and rather than have some integrity, Cruz just plows along. You could call him a team player, but, you know.
Yeah.
But when somebody is insulting everybody, how do you say that's good?
I'll tell you what, it worked. He won.
I know.
He won. He won. Everybody's against him. He won.
It's
astounding.
I mean, that may be the paradox.
Yeah.
But it's still, I mean, we still need some civility.
Well, I would agree with you on that. But I also, look, the direction that we were going, was more of the same.
Well, see, that's the thing. I mean, I could say I'm not a Trumpster, but whenever somebody says something negative about Trump, you just say, well, who is the opponent?
Right. Yeah, do we really want more of this stagnation? Do we really want more of centralizing power to D.C.? Because any other candidate, that's exactly what would have continued. I want to try something different, and I'm glad. And they're, guess what? They're doing it in Britain with the Brexit thing. They're saying, we're out of here. We don't want any part of this. They said it in France. Of all places, France. France is left of the moon. I mean, they are so far left. I think they're left of Venezuela, right?
Right.
I mean, they are so far left. And yet what they did, when you start adding up the numbers, it's phenomenal what happened there. It's crazy. When you have the two candidates that are left are, a right-wing nut. Okay. And she got 35% of the votes. And then the other guy, who is way right of the other guy and way right of anybody else in France, he wins. That's an amazing thing. That's such a dynamic shift in politics in France.
Mm-hmm.
From bigger government, more centralized planning, all of the academics, all of the politicians, all the smart people make all the decisions so we could just go home and have a glass of wine and watch TV. That's what life in Europe had been becoming. And now all of a sudden we're just like, boom, it's changing.
Well, you know, Trump has made every Republican look like a sissy, you know. I mean, it's kind of really, it's you know, Trump is up there, you know, and people are saying, what, you know, it's pathetic.
Yep.
You want to fire everybody in Congress is what you want to do.
Yeah, I agree.
Well,
all
take
right.
care. Have Jim, another nice hour and a half.
All right. Thanks for your call, buddy. Thanks
Bye-bye.
For hanging on. Have a good day.
You too. Thanks.
Bye. And let's go ahead and go over to Tom Munns. Tom, thanks for hanging on. Go ahead, please.
Well, thank you, Mr. Petzo. It's good to hear your voice on the radio this morning.
Thank you. It's good to hear you, too. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on. I'm trying something new. I'm on the treadmill, so hopefully I'm okay.
Don't go too fast. We don't want you to, you know, it's like texting and driving. You shouldn't be doing too much. We don't want you to fall and hurt yourself.
I'm texting as I'm going, so that'll be interesting. I was listening to your interview with Steve Ackerman this morning, and I'm really glad that Idaho has a guy that has read the health care bill from front to back more than anybody else, and so I believe that he is probably the greatest expert we have in the field.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I wanted to mention, though, when you were talking about Brexit, is sovereign independence of nations trumps political party. And so I believe that what we're seeing with Brexit, because of the coup that occurred in the creation of the European Union, is something that people have finally woken up to. Americans still are moving toward the collective, while Europe believes that the collective no longer necessarily works like it was, like they were sold to. Have you ever heard of sustainable medicine?
No, not really.
Yeah, we hear a lot about sustainable this and sustainable that. And well, there's something called sustainable medicine. And what directly relates to healthcare is the fact that it'll really be interesting to see what Trump does, because a single-payer healthcare is what's necessary for the full implementation of sustainable medicine through the United Nations Agenda 21.
Mm-hmm.
What you see is we're beginning to see international education like Common Core, international environmental regulations, international banks, international courts, international trade agreements, the move toward regionalism to be able to move toward collective Soviet bloc-style nations like the creation of the EU. And so what's really gone under the radar here that most people are not aware of is the full implementation of the United Nations Agenda 21 in our own backyard. We've got heavy-paid lobbyists that are working with our mayors and our local governments to be able to not only abolish state, city borders and county borders in favor of regional governments, but what they're doing is they're beginning to replace our local governments with NGOs or non-governmental organizations, which are nothing more but private interest groups. So
right.
When you talk about healthcare, it's very, very important that we link the root cause of the desire for single payer. And I think the reason why Trump is doing so well and people view him as chaotic is because I think that's where his success lies. If he were to truly come out with his agenda like Nixon did, but Trump say, well, we're going to go ahead and completely dismantle, any attachment to global government, the guy would probably be dead already. And so the idea, and obviously we know that repealing health care is the way to go, because as far as our Constitution, if it exists, wouldn't allow for a replacement. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that. And also the issue with the Republican Party, what huge issues like this are going to do is to awaken people more and more, like you were talking about people moving towards independent media, to be able to realize there really is little difference between party. And so once America realizes there's no difference between party, that's when the unification can begin. And it's highly critical or highly important that Americans, Democrats, Republicans, whatever, communicate about the issue and not just lambast each other because we belong to a particular party. And so I thought I'd leave those thoughts with you for what it's worth, Dave.
I appreciate
you having me on.
I appreciate it. Thanks so much, Tom. Good thoughts, and appreciate your call and your time today. Have a great day.
Thank you, buddy.
Thanks.
Too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. And we do have to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll hopefully be visiting with you at 580-KIDO, 580-5436. If you called in earlier, we didn't have time for you. Now's a good chance. And in about 10 minutes, 15 minutes, we're going to hear from Marv Hagedorn, who is running for lieutenant governor. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo, KIDO.
Well, welcome and thank you for joining us. I'm Dave Petzo, sitting in for the Kevin Miller. And here in just a moment, we'll, about 10 minutes or so, in the second half of this hour, we're going to be visiting with Lieutenant Governor candidate Marv Hagedorn. And so that'll be coming up here in the next half hour, talking about everything from health care, why is he running, and all kinds of crazy stuff. We'll see how that flows. And obviously, we'll welcome your questions as well. Right now, speaking of welcoming questions, let's go to Liberty Linda. Liberty Linda, hello.
Yes, good morning, Dave.
Good morning,
You're
Linda.
Great job this morning.
Well, thank you.
Anyway, you know, Dave, I was wondering if President Trump knew this would happen. I mean, he has his guys there in Washington, and they probably know how each person would vote on it. So I really don't think this is a surprise. I think he knew this would happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of glad that they're throwing it out, because as far as I can see, they wouldn't be able to bring it back later if we happen to get a Democrat in as president. What do you think about that?
Well, I think that I have to go with, you know, I understand what you're saying. But one of the things that I have is, in fact, I share the concern that Steve Ackerman had, and obviously he's more of an expert than I am in politics. And here's the issue. If he thinks it's a disaster for Republicans to not have a health care bill, then I have to go with that thought process. That troubles me. So the idea that we could lose the House, for example, because they have 7 years of promises that they're going to do something in health care and don't, when they have all three branches of government. And I think it does show, as Jim pointed out last hour in a phone call, there's just nobody, and Steve Ackerman mentioned this exact same thing, there's no real champions in the House. There's no champion, and Trump doesn't seem to really care about health care much either. So without a champion, without acting like the Republicans care about health care, and they haven't historically, and they certainly aren't now. I think it is a bad omen for that, and I think that's a fair question to ask Marv Hagedorn when he's on here in a few minutes.
Wonderful! Yeah, I really think it should be on the state level, that they shouldn't even be talking about it. That's my feelings on it.
Linda, I don't disagree with you on this, except that with 20% of the economy is health care. And the costs are out of control.
Yeah.
Technology is going to solve almost all of our problems and then create some other ones, right? Like Terminator Part 14 or whatever coming up. All that with artificial intelligence. All these things are amazing. But with medical technology, you know, the idea that people are going to die of cancer and all these other things, to me, seems they won't be. Before very long. And so all of these things and all the innovations of being able to come in and just a quick prick on the finger, and you know 90% of what could possibly be wrong with a person with a simple test at Walmart, for example, this would solve a lot of the problems of cost. But that's using the private sector. It's using our brain cells. It's not allowing for central planning. So we have, on one hand, I think we have to have an idea centrally, because it's 20% of the overall economy, so general rules, but we've got to take care of things on a local basis, which means the local Walmart in a free society, a capitalist society, says we're going to test you for $15, $20 with a PA in the lobby, or you can go sit in the nursing home in the emergency room for 3 hours, and it'll cost you $500, and people will obviously make the correct choice. And that will save the system a tremendous amount of money.
Oh, you're absolutely correct.
But it's not that simple. You know, I make it simple. We all have our own simple little ideas, but the idea of 20% of the economy being simple is not. It's not. It's a very difficult thing, and there's so many different constituencies, but we've got to get behind this, and we've got to. I am concerned that they didn't get this passed because, again, it's another, quotes, failure to the agenda. I was disappointed that they even brought up health care to start. It's too complicated. They should have built momentum with tax reform and get the economy going and all those things. They didn't. And that, to me, is a monumental failure of the legislative leadership.
Correct. And we all have different needs. One size does not fit all.
No, it doesn't.
So, you know, to me it doesn't make any sense. Thank you for sharing that with me and everyone. And thank you for your wonderful people, Steve Ackerman, Tom Munns, Hank. They all made very good points.
Well, thank Kevin for attracting all those good folks around here. So good stuff. Thank you, Linda.
Thank you, Dave. Have a great day.
You do the same. Thank you. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Before we go to a quick break here, again, I want to bring up from an economic perspective as well before we continue to dive into politics here. This economy continues to roll in spite of all of the problems out there, in spite of all the talk, whether it's Brexit, whether it's Obamacare before. Obama was going to be a disaster for the stock market. He didn't sink it, even with higher taxes, more government regulation. So the idea that the market is too high now, it's been too high for thousands of points. The same people have been talking about it being too high since 2010. Literally, we got to worry about Greece. A country with a GDP the size of Vermont. This is going to take down the world. And then a peanut of a place. Remember when we were worried about, Crete? There was a bank in Crete, of all places. I've seen Crete. You can't find it on one of those globes, right? Because it's too small to put on a big globe. That's how big a deal all this negative news was. And so overreported. We have this. It hits. And the market rolls, and now we actually have positive policies. And this is what we forget. These policies aren't going to take effect. We don't have to have 100% of them hit. But the idea of less regulation, lower taxes, the trajectory of this country and decentralizing it is monumental. We were always on this track, Republicans and Democrats both, more and more centralization moving towards D.C., slows down the economy because government is non-productive and we're simply taking resources from productive, give it to non-productive, but that's going to work how? It never works, ever. It's all great intention, but it won't work. So we've moved from that to this higher growth situation. Of course that's good for the stock market. And why we sit around and guess the top of something that for our entire life just goes higher with periodic corrections is a completely, you know what it is? It's stupid. It's just being stupid. I don't know why people have to try to read tea leaves they can't read. It makes no sense. I mean, I can be nice about this, try to be nice, but the idea, it makes no sense. Market timing doesn't work. The market has gone up your whole life. And we continue to look for tops that don't exist. Then we get a correction, and then we go to new all-time highs. It's what we do. But to sit there today and not look at the ground conditions, the shift that happened in November, is missing an important point. The whole trajectory of our economy, our government, changed. It may not all take effect right away, but over time, we stopped increasing regulation. A very big deal. All right, we got to take a break for Fox News. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Marv Hagedorn, Lieutenant Governor candidate. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo, KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Of course, I'm Dave Petzo, sitting in for Kevin Miller today. Again, Kevin, thank you so much. It's been my privilege and to enjoy doing this from time to time. And thank you again for trusting me with your precious baby. And as people, don't really understand how much personality goes into trying to do a program to reach people on a day-to-day basis. And Kevin came here and I think 8 years ago, at a really low point in his life, for sure, and came here and rebuilt a station that John and Chris had left in good shape, but then it faded away and after they were gone. And all those folks out there remember John and Chris here. A lot of us do, of course. That's where I started with them. But Kevin rebuilt this thing and turned it into a very popular and great place to share ideas. So, Kevin, thank you for trusting me with your baby. It's something that's very precious to him. It's not just a gig, a job. And right now I want to introduce a super guy that I've known now for a long, long time. That's Marv Hagedorn. And now you're running for lieutenant governor, Marv. That's it's a big step from the legislature now.
Morning, Dave.
Good morning.
My first question is to you. Who's watching my money?
That's right. That's right. I got to get out of here and go
watch it.
Good. Hey, you know, thanks again for being here. How long have you been in the House first? Let's get a little background here.
Well, I was appointed to the House back in the first week of the session in 2007.
Okay.
And I spent 6 years in the House, and then we had a redistricting, and there wasn't any seats left, and so I ended up running for the Senate. And I'm on my fifth year in the Senate.
How about that? Okay. And I assume you have been overwhelmingly elected each time, reelected.
Yeah.
I hear good thing. I know a few people in your district. They like you. I'm sure you have the detractors.
Yeah.
That's part of the job, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
But it's a very neat thing for you to have stepped away. This is something you've done. I know you had a successful work career. And now this is what you pretty much do full time, even though it's, quotes, a part time job.
Yeah, it is. You know, I retired from the Navy, and I did have a pretty good business going for a while, and it was really hard to do that business and do the state's work at the same time.
Yeah.
And fortunately, Patty's got a great job, which allowed me to close that down and just do the state stuff. And of course, you know, I also help with the Wyken Foundation as well for wounded veterans and wounded and ill and getting those guys back in and getting them transitioned into the private sector.
Wonderful.
So that's kind of what I do today.
That's good.
Yeah.
We appreciate it. I know it's not something that I know you've spent a lot of time, and it certainly is a gift to the state that people like you are able to take that much time after a good working career.
Yeah.
So let's ask you this question. Why are you running for lieutenant governor? I mean, everybody who runs for lieutenant governor is, you know, like it's a stepping stone, right? Brad Little is now stepping, right? So that's what the big thought is. How about you?
You know, the funny thing is doing this political thing was never on my bucket list. And I actually ended up getting appointed because I lost a bet. That's a whole different story.
we want to hear that story.
We don't want to hear that today, yeah. But I will have 12 years in the legislature by the end of this next session. And I personally think that's enough. I think we need to bring new folks in periodically.
Mm-hmm.
And 12 years is a good time. So I'm going to step out, and we're facing a situation that we haven't faced in 12 years, where we're going to have a new governor, and we're going to look at new department heads across the board. We're going to be, you know, new commissions and people on all kinds. I mean, there's going to be a lot of appointments and a lot of things made. It's very possible that we could have a new governor that is not familiar with the current issues, the history of those issues, how we got to where we got. Or where we are now in the naturopath issue, as an example. There's a lot going on, and my focus is basically continuity of what's been happening to help the new administration get on board and get set up. And then right now, I mean, honestly, right now my intention is to help get everybody settled. We're going to have new leadership in the House, new leadership in the Senate. I've served in both, and they are both very different bodies. Get everybody running like they should be running, and then I'm going to try and retire again. That's my that's what I'm going to. I keep flunking that, but that's what I'm going to try to do.
So you think you're really shooting for one, maybe two terms as lieutenant governor, and then done?
Yeah, yeah. And people ask me, well, why don't you? You know, are you going to run for governor? Or why don't you run for governor?
Uh-huh.
And I honestly, I don't have any desire to do that. I've seen what the governor does. It's a tough job.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that I'm afraid of a tough job, but there's a lot of handshaking and baby kissing, and I'm dyslexic. You mix that up once, right? Just once, and it's all over. And so I just don't think I want that job.
I gotcha. Well, good.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So you feel that your best role right now is exactly what you're running for.
Exactly.
And help organize and get us moving forward.
Yep. Yep.
Okay, let me swing that question here, because this is one that troubles me on a state level a great deal. And why I think state government is so incredibly dysfunctional. And that is, if we will, in the era, think of it this way, in the era of Trump, of bringing outsiders in to fix things instead of bureaucrats that are entrenched, which is what's wrong with D.C. So on a smaller level, that's what's wrong in the government.
Right.
So, yeah, okay, so this really great person, nice guy, everybody just loves Joe, who is the lieutenant to this head of the department. Well, and he's politically aligned with the new governor, so therefore he automatically gets the job, and nothing changes.
Right.
So we have another really entrenched bureaucrat that loves big government, even no matter if they're a Republican. They love big government because they're part of big government, and we're stuck with agencies that are dysfunctional and can't ever get better, even in Idaho. What do we do about that?
Well, one of the things that I learned when I was appointed, I thought, you know, these guys just don't have any common sense. They don't have any business sense. They don't
Right.
understand how to run
anything,
an organization, an efficient organization. Well, I learned that, number one, government has regulations and rules that businesses don't have. And so they have to not only try and run efficiently, but they've got all of these rules, our administrative rules that we review every year, that they're like surrounded by all of these mm-hmm. rules that they can't step outside this box. So we, the legislature, a lot of times box these departments in so tight because either one, we don't trust them to do their job, or and maybe sometimes that they've earned that distrust.
Yeah.
And we don't review those rules that, okay, maybe they have a good efficient process going right now or can be more efficient, but we don't go back and adjust those rules to allow them to do that.
Right.
Businesses don't have to deal a lot with that.
Right.
Right.
We've got
a lot more flexibility.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, our rules in business aren't necessarily dealing with fairness. They're dealing with productivity.
Exactly.
Government's and has to be fair. I understand.
And looking
there's
at margins.
Some constraints.
Government doesn't have margins.
Right.
Right? And so I remember when I was in the military doing my budgets, and it was like, okay, take last year's budget, put 5% on
exactly.
top of that, and then
right.
turn that in.
Right. And don't you dare look at cost savings.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, you make sure you spend all your money at the end of the year.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And so... It's not rocket science to understand how the departments are working. We've got a great process, and again, it took me a long time to learn this process that we've got and how things are working. Going through JFAC, our Joint Finance Committee, where we look at every dollar, and we interview every department head mm-hmm. on why do you need this particular dollar? Why do you need this car? How many miles does that one have on it? I mean, all of those kinds of questions are asked that the public probably doesn't recognize or doesn't know that we go through all of those processes. And there's legislators that will ask those questions, and then there's some legislators that won't. And so knowing if your legislator is really doing their job or not is important. So that's I think people need to be involved and understand what the people that are representing them, if they're doing that on doing that well or not.
Right, right. So, but you know, again, as we look at, I know you want to touch on healthcare and some of these other
okay.
hot
yeah.
button issues.
Yeah.
So, but we've got to take a break coming up. So let's go ahead and leave a nice opening here. And if you have any questions for Marv, it's 580-KIDO. We've got one more segment left. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo. Dave is taking calls right now. Call 580-5436. This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo, KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thanks again for joining us. I'm Dave Pezzo, sitting in for Kevin Miller. Again, thank you, Kevin. I hope you're having a great day with your family. And, of course, right here is Marv Hagedorn, who's been in the legislature, what, 12 years?
Yeah, it'll be 12 years, 12 years after next session, yeah.
And is now running for lieutenant governor with a very unique thought. Give him a term, and you're not using this for a stepping stone to governor at all.
And I get it. A lot of people do. In fact, I asked Brad one time what his plans were, and he never had plans to run for governor either.
Interesting.
Yeah, and that's why I'm saying this is because I got to caveat this. Brad decided after he'd been there for a long time, you know, he said, okay, I'm kind of ready for this. I want to do this. Well, I'm saying I don't have a desire to do that.
Right.
I spent 20 years in the Navy. I've spent 12 years in the legislature. Public service is something I really enjoy doing, but there's a limit to that.
Absolutely. I can't. You and I have talked off air a number of times about how difficult sitting through meetings can be and people yelling at you and they're just a little bit more than fired up.
Yeah. People get passionate.
They get passionate, and that's good. Passion's good.
I certainly model
that to a degree, but hopefully not in a too angry a way. But I understand that would be very difficult. And sometimes I would imagine on a legislative level that it would just drive you crazy that somebody maybe wants a speed bump in their neighborhood, and that's just not a really pressing issue.
Right.
Yeah, but it is
to prioritize. And you have to prioritize your family, too.
Yeah.
You know, you give up a lot of family time to do this job.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes, well, I think all the time, family should come first. Yeah. And so there's a time when it's time to go home to family and say, let's travel a little bit or let's go have some fun.
Let's go have a vacation. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I talked with Kevin about that yesterday.
Yeah.
Is taking time off is a meaningful thing. It's an important thing. It is. All right. Let's get back to what you want to talk about here as far as health care. And I know you've been involved with the health care exchanges and all those things in Idaho. Okay, so we have this fresh announcement today, right? It's done on a national basis, at least for right now. They're going to repeal. Where does that leave Idaho?
You know, I chaired a healthcare task force last summer to try and figure out where we could go because we've got a population that's not covered currently, and we're not going to expand Medicaid, and so we were trying to figure out how to take care of these folks. The problem that we have is healthcare is very, very, very complicated.
Mm-hmm.
We had in this task force everyone from Sue Chu, Representative Sue Chu, to Representative Judy Boyle. And that's a pretty wide spectrum from right to left. The task force was 100% in agreement. We needed to do something, and we needed to do it with a Millennium Fund, and we needed to use our own money that we could control. And we couldn't get anything passed last year.
Even though
that spectrum
agreed.
Right.
Wow.
And the problem was, how big of a bite did you want to take? For some people, to solve the problem would have taken much more than what we had money for.
Mm-hmm.
For other people, we didn't want to do anything because we don't know what President Trump and the Congress is going to come up with.
Gotcha.
So some people wanted a little bite, some people wanted a huge bite, and we couldn't find that sweet spot in between.
To get enough people rallied around one single idea,
right,
like they're dealing with in D.C. now.
Exactly.
Okay.
I've said for years, Obamacare is going to fail. We know it's going to fail. We know it's going to collapse. And the only way for Congress to get out of this looking sweet, because that's what they all want to look like,
sure,
they're going to have to pass it to the states somehow and allow the states to take care of it. And so that's what they're going to work on. And in order to get there, they're going to have to force themselves with a date time certain. In other words, I believe they need to repeal it and say Obamacare is repealed on, say, October 1st of 2018. And then they're going to be forced to have to deal with that repeal sometime between now and 2018.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to have to come up with the fixes that they're going to need in the pre-Obamacare world. They're going to have to come up with those fixes and implement those fixes before October 1st of 2018. That's going to force them with a deadline.
Right. Why did they attack healthcare first?
Because
it's so complex.
I know it really is. And their thought process was, okay, we've got to fix that. We've got to save a trillion dollars so we can adjust our budget. I mean, they really have got to do some spending reform. They're talking about tax reform, and that's basically they're trying to starve the beast.
Yep.
You got to change your spending habits. Mm. They've got to change their policies and laws to change those spending habits. Starving the beast is that's been tried over and over and over again. We're $20 trillion in debt.
Yep.
They've got to change their spending habits.
Well, how do we get that? That's an interesting point. We've only got a couple minutes left, Marv, but what do we do as a country to get people to understand that we have a pending problem?
Oh, yeah.
That this is a massive problem. It's 20 years away. Japan is just a few years away.
Right.
But
right.
That's where we're going.
Exactly.
If we don't do something. And they can't fix it. Abenomics, whatever they call it, Abenomics, that's it, is as good as it gets, and
right.
They can't fix it.
Right.
How do we get that sense of urgency to people that 20 years from now it's going to blow up?
We have to somehow put some deadlines on these folks. I tried that with a balanced budget amendment to the U.S. Constitution. I've been pushing that for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
That will encircle them and force them to balance the budget.
Can we get it done?
I mean,
we've heard about that for decades.
I know. Yeah.
It's just tough. It's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. They've got to do something, but it's about spending. It's totally about spending.
Got to feed the beast.
Yep.
And it just grows and grows.
Yeah. Sadly.
Marv Hagedorn, good luck to you. You're a good man.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate the opportunity to be here. And Kevin, you're right. Kevin does a lot of work to run this show and bring people together, and I really appreciate that.
That's good. Well, thanks again. Good luck on this campaign.
Thank you, sir.
And all right, we're going to have to take a break now and get out of here for Fox News at the top of the hour. And we've got another hour left. Well, hopefully we'll be taking your call.
Why? It's about more than sports and working out.
It's about making my community better.
Living a healthier life.
Spending time together as a family.
It's where I go to learn and play after school.
The Y strengthens communities.
By helping kids reach their full potential.
Encouraging healthy living.
And inspiring social responsibility.
Get involved. Find a Y near you. Visit YMCA.net.
Russell Wilson here. The Play 60, United Way, and the NFL are helping kids play at least 60 minutes a day. Get involved. Go to unitedway.org/play60. Brought to you by United Way and the App.
Coast to Talk. 580 AM KIDO Napa. And now at 107.5 FM Boise. This is KIDO Talk Radio. Fox News. Now.
Okay, so 5 tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
$10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Hello and welcome. welcome to hour number two of Money Matters. And, of course, these are my opinions only. And yes, I am live. I should probably mention that since we just finished up a recording from this week. And it was fun to do Kevin's program. It was fun. It's tuckers you out. It's a lot of work to do 3 hours. It really is. But it was a lot of fun. And it really, you're not sure what you're going to fill with 3 hours of time, right? You're not sure what you're going to fill with 1 hour. That's the interesting thing with radio. You just, when you've done it for a while, right? I mean, you know, the first time I did it, you kind of come in and you go, okay. And then you've got this huge script and you're just scared to death you're going to have like a minute, or no, like 1 second of dead air. And so you usually have this giant bunch of notes, a book, and you don't even get halfway through it because you just don't. But you're scared to have, like, I don't know what I would say. And then after the years go by and stuff, sometimes you just kind of go. A thought pops in your head, and you run. You run with it. But it's awful. There's an awful lot clanking around in this head, I tell you, because you just go and go and go. But because of that this week, I had a lot going on. A lot of different meetings and seminars. I mean, just full this week of stuff. And what that always does to me is it gives me a lot of reflection, right? Because oftentimes I'm actually reflecting a story, right? Like I did with clients the other day. It was just one of those things where you just go, you know, it just strikes you. This is the story. You're picking up and you're looking at and you're seeing somebody else's take, if you will, on what some of the greats were doing, you know, and saying, and how that applies to the market, applies to our thought process. Because the market is the whole point that we're trying to get away from. You see, when you sit down and you think about what the greats tell you, they tell you to behave correctly. They don't tell you what the market's going to do. They tell you to stop behaving the way you behave so you can keep the money that you make and make it grow. It's really when we think about what Warren Buffett spoke this, and when we think about the great wisdom of that, John Templeton said this. Davis said this. And it goes on, right? Peter Lynch was talking about this. He doesn't talk about, okay, here's the secret sauce of how to pick the right stocks. They don't. They're not quoted on, you know, well, what you do is you do this thing over here, look for P.E. ratio, blah, blah, blah. No. They may talk about it somewhere. We like this stock because it sells for low multiple. We think the market isn't giving it enough credit. Stuff like that. But when we talk about wisdom, we are talking about emotions in everything. That's what I love about this industry, because it's everything. You just have to sit and think. And all of this stuff of being patient, not hyperventilating about things, not feeling like you have to do something all the time, or you're not an active investor. All of that applies to everything in our life. People aren't patient. We're not patient with each other. You know, when you're investing, you have to get used to making a lot of mistakes, just like all the boneheads around us. And us. It applies to everything. All this patience and letting things happen and letting the world go. Letting go of all the noise. It applies to everything. And so it gives you this kind of a point of reflection. And I shared the story this week, and it just kind of reminds me. It was just a little quick thing. Just bang, boom, pops in your head, like I said. And you go, this is the thing. When people are talking about, we're talking about all these wise people, all of these great tidbits. And they were great investors. And none of the things that people talk about and remember, none of them are about the way they invest. They're about our temperament. They're about being wise. They're about being patient. All of it is behavior. All of it. But what does all of the media tell you? What does all of that, I mean all of it, say? Buy, buy, buy. Sell, sell, sell. You got to do this. We have this little option thing. It is back and forth and back and forth of what to do now. We think the market's going to zig and zag and up and down and this or that. I mean, it just goes on endlessly. And I would call that, if we're saying these are the wise, best investors ever, and they are, inarguably. Nobody says, you know, Warren Buffett, no, he's a bonehead. Nobody says that. I mean, nobody. The ridiculous option trading, you know, 30 minutes or whatever on a Friday afternoon, we think the best option trade that's coming millisecond is going to be a long, short straddle. Oh, great. That's not Warren Buffett at all. It's the anti-Warren Buffett. It's anti-wisdom. It's anti-making money. It's anti-peace. It's anti-prosperity. It serves us so poorly. So when we reflect on, you know, when you get to be in this industry a long, long time, you can't help but dial it back a little bit. Dial back the noise. Become a little more peaceful about whatever the market's going to do. And you try to reach people in a different way. To teach them to quit thinking about what the very best stock is, when we should sell Micron, when we need all those things. Of course you think about those things. But we're always wrong. Because if you sold Micron and it goes another dollar higher, you're wrong. You're always wrong. You never get the highest price. You're always wrong by some magnitude. Always. So you can't be right. So you have to make big picture decisions and live with them, knowing that often you're wrong. Often. It's a hard place to get to, but when you get there, a lot of good things happen. You become a much better investor. Peace enters into your life, weirdly. Lots of stuff goes right. You feel better. You see, it spills out in everything when we behave reasonably and we're not all about needing to be right all the time. But you think about that and you think about all these different things. Well, I like real estate, or I like this, or I like that, or I think this is, or I don't want to own stocks. My grandpa yelled it into the crib, never buy stocks, never buy stocks. My grandma said it was a giant casino. And the guy on the radio, he says he's a Wall Street casino. I want guarantees. How do you get guarantees? Here's the guarantee. If you don't invest, you can't keep up with inflation. Period. Boom. Done. That's it. Your money will run out. Guarantee. Won't keep up. Never has. Never has. Not just because interest rates are artificially low. Not because the Federal Reserve. Nothing like that. It always was because interest rates are a reflection of inflation. They are. You see, if we take a giant step back, just a giant step back, and I've shared this story before, but it's important. I don't think I can share it enough. I can't share it enough in my head and in my heart, in my spirit, to embrace this, to keep embracing it. But when I started in this industry in 1980, it was really hard in 1980. Interest rates were 21.5%. Let me repeat that because it sounds made up. 21.5. percent. If you had a job, your neighbor didn't. We just came out of Richard Nixon and Jimmy Carter. The Dow was at 800 on its way down to 750 before it bottomed. It was miserable. It was just plain miserable. And when you talk about, and I don't mean we were starving like the Great Depression. I'm just saying it was hard to get a job. It was hard to pay your bills. Really was. It was certainly hard to sell investments. Nobody had extra money. And who in their right mind is going to give a 19-year-old any money? Those of you that did, God bless you. Thank you for allowing me to eat. Barely got by. But I survived. That's fine. That's another day. That's another story. And it's a great story. I can't believe I get to do what I get to do. But the Dow is at 800, down to 750. Between now and then, we have had countless dozens of 10% greater and greater corrections. We've had a market crash, 24% in one day, erased. We had the Soviet Union. I know, it's not a big deal. Implosion of the Soviet Union. Those of us who grew up with the little, you know, drills of putting our head under the desk, not a big deal. I know, because it's done. It's done. Soviet Union. Nuclear annihilation. We had two 50% market corrections. Two. We saw the NASDAQ fall over 75% because it has a lot of tech stocks in it. We saw a great financial collapse. We saw Asian flu, bird flu. I'm not joking. We saw long-term capital. We saw currency crisis after currency crisis. We saw Europe part one, two, three, and four. Never ending. And the Dow managed to go from 800 to 21,000. Now, you can rip your hair out every day. You can run around with your hair on fire, and you can figure out what kind of weird option strategy you want to find out. You want to try to figure out some way to hedge things, a little stop-loss thing. You want to worry and fuss. Then you can be exactly the opposite of wise. You can be the dead opposite of all of the great investors. All of them. So read and dig. Figure out when gold's going to go up or if Bitcoin's the thing. Figure out why the stock market is a bad place to be. It's about ready to crash again. Figure all that out. Worry about it. Fuss over it. Get digging in some of those blogs. Connect the dots all over. And miss 800 to 21,000. Miss your lifetime return of 10%. Be sure to trade in and out. The more you do, the worse you can do. And the more angst and anxiety you get to have in your life. Fuss all you want. Or start your journey. Even if you're not 20 years old, start now. And finish. Behave well. Don't panic. It's okay. You can't figure out the future. Life doesn't come with a guarantee. Life is just a beautiful experience. It just is. It's a gift. And we can choose to fuss about it and find all the time what's wrong with it and why we're about ready to collapse yet again. But when you do that, you don't get the market returns. You don't get them. So try to beat the market. You won't. You won't. Try to outguess it because you're feeling a little bit of anxiety over here. The more you trade, the worse you'll do. That's a promise. Or you can start your journey and you can relax about this. And we all know the endless stories. I can only tell you my story. This is the easiest, hardest thing that there is. It's so easy to start this journey with $100 a month. It's so easy to just keep it in there and add to it. And you are going to be super successful. That's easy. We make it hard, though, don't we? With all of the noise and all of the anxiety. We make it hard to just hang on. You see, it's not logical. I've often talked about Star Trek because I love the Vulcan and human interaction and all that. It's just talking about our humanness. But, you know, we all know that. What it would be like to be a Vulcan and invest. Oh, stocks are down. Good. Let's buy. I mean, it just would be simple. They would just simply look over the world of investments and all of history and go, well, I'm going to put all my money into the great corporations of the world. What, there is no other decision. It's illogical. Everything else is illogical. It has the highest returns. It requires none of my time. It is illogical to do anything else. Why would I put money in something that does less? Why would I create anxiety in my life? This makes no sense. And it doesn't. But we're human. That makes it hard. So it's the easiest, hardest thing to do. To buy and hold and stop trying to predict when the next world-ending thing is. We've had them. Over and over. I can only tell you what I lived the 35 years that I've been in this industry. And you can too. What we were afraid of yesterday, we're afraid of now. But when we fixate our value on our net worth every day, we really miss it. Our number is 580-KIDO, 580-5436. If you prefer, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. Pro-life, you hang on. I'm going to grab you on the backside of this break. We'll be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. Dave is taking...
And they want to help you sleep cooler. Sounds great in these triple digits, doesn't it? Take advantage now. The coolest sleep sale ever at Mattress Firm. Please tell them Kevin Miller sent you.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petso. KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. 580-5436. 580-KIDO. If you prefer email, it's dave@petsofinancial.net. Let's go ahead and go to the phones. Pro-Life, how are you today? Thanks for waiting.
Oh, hey. I like listening to you.
Well, thank you.
But anyway, you were asking early right on the, when you first started talking about what grows the stock market. And the reason we have a stock market in this country and maybe Western Europe and maybe some of the countries of the world don't have what we have is because of governmental policy and institutional policy. So when we decided that if you invest in a retirement, the government is going to give you a tax break. They're not going to charge you income tax on that. And you get a lot of different kind of breaks for investments. So the 401k money, the pension money, like in Idaho, the Percy money, all of that goes into investment. without tax consequences or very little tax consequences. And so that, so people are invited to do that, and that causes that whole culture to grow and grow. So that feeds the market all the time. Now, if we were ever to say, you know, for the government to help retirement, we're going to get out of that. Every individual is just going to have to decide how they, what they're going to do with their retirement money. And there was no tax consequence, tax benefit consequence, then our stock market would not do what it's doing. It might even crash if that happened all at once. So that's all I'm saying is that that's why we have, and I suppose that it's just going to keep the governmental policy is not ever going to change. So that's what keeps feeding that money on a daily basis, weekly basis, as paychecks are created. You know, it just keeps flowing into the stock market.
Well, some of it does, but it also might. But my point here is that it can flow anywhere. Okay, let's start with that. Let me back up to two things, though. Okay, there are tax benefits when you put money away, but it's fully taxable when you take it out. Okay. So it's not that the government is giving anything away in order to prop anything up. But the choice of pensions, if you will, let's say Percy. So Percy is really not, because that's our own money, right? I mean, that is, I can't remember the exact percentage, but it's very small percentage is actually funded by the public employees. It's taxes, okay, that go into it to fund it. It's I don't mean like it's 2%, but it's certainly not even half of the money in Percy is actually funded by the employees. It's funded by tax dollars. And so so that is not a tax break. So, but the choice of Percy is, where do we put the money? So they put a little bit in real estate, they've got bonds, and they've got stocks and some cash. And the choices of those managers are, where are we going to put the money, not what tax policy is. And so, because all investments are basically taxed the same, I mean, there are certainly ridiculous advantages to real estate, because otherwise nobody would buy real estate. It's highly leveraged. You can't move it. It's illiquid. It's a problem. So without deductions and things like that, it would be a much lesser investment, right? But if we think about it from tax policy, there are no advantages to choosing stocks over another investment, but people do. So I hear what you're saying, but certainly if all of a sudden you didn't give tax breaks, then you would certainly dry up some of the 401k money coming in. But that would not kill the market, not in any kind of a long-term basis. It continues to deal with all kinds of policy. And the reason I want to take that a step further, pro-life, is because I think we have to also be careful of putting – why the market's doing certain things on to a certain thing. If we do, then we miss the Dow moving from 6,600 to 21,000 by saying it's all the Fed. It's all fake. It's the Fed. Then we turn around and we miss, as an example, I'm not picking on you, I'm saying then we miss this huge rally, which was also caused by record profits, record dividend payments, record stock buybacks, the mending of the balance sheets of corporations. In other words, all on their own, regardless of the Fed, if you just simply blame the Fed and then when the cookie, you know, they take away the cookie jar or all this free money, then it's going to collapse. Then you stay out and you miss the picture of improving profits, which they obviously were. And that's, I think, a danger when we say the market would be wiped out if we didn't have pension money. It would not. People are still going to invest somewhere with their excess money. It might go down for a while as it has a normal correction, but I don't think it's going to wipe it out. Again, it's not one thing. The reason the market is at its high, I think we always have to stop and reflect. Why is the market at high? And I know I kind of tease this from time to time and say, gee, I don't know. I am completely confused myself. But I do know we're at all-time high record profits, all-time high dividends, all-time high cash flows for corporations, all-time high buybacks, and the balance sheets of the great corporations of the world are at the best they've ever been. It's confusing to me. I don't know why the market's at all-time highs. You see, we miss that simplistic picture of profits are what drives the market.
Well, no, I agree with that. But and liquidity is a big deal. I mean, you know, stocks and bonds and paper investments like that, they're liquid.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm saying is that the huge amount of money that flows from paychecks and governments for pensions and retirements, that steady amount of money going in all the time creates a stability to the stock market, to the investment field, you know, and so people never, they don't get panicked, and they think, you know, it's a good thing. And so I think that's fine. You know, that's just what I'm saying, is that if that steady amount of flow did not come in, there would be bigger fluctuations, and it wouldn't be, you know, people wouldn't have the same amount of confidence in the market that they do.
Right, right, right.
So anyway.
Or any market, because, again, yeah. where we put our money, our excess money that we don't spend, whether it's for retirement, savings, investment, we make that choice.
Yep.
Stocks, bonds, cash, and the other things, I know people who are gold bugs or get all excited about it, but that's not a real area. It's not. It's so small. It's tiny. It is of no real interest in the world of investing. Is what gold is doing. So we have those other things. But what I'm saying is, it's basically, when you're talking about managing billions or in collectively trillions of dollars out there in retirement funds, endowments, personal savings, and investments, trillions of dollars in the world, then the choices really are stocks, bonds, cash, real estate. That's it. And so we make those choices, and the money moves. And whether there's a tax break or not, we're making those choices. But your point's well taken, that money comes in and flows into all of the above on a regular basis, and that does stabilize it. As long as the economy's growing. When the economy's not growing, money flows out, not in. And that's bad.
Well, I say that government should never have gotten involved in it, you know, giving tax incentives. But, I'm a very limited government person. But I think that moral conditions over centuries and decades create economics. If you have a increasing population, in other words, you're having children and there's more, and families are growing, they're not staying stable, they're growing all the time, that creates good economics.
It does.
So when a nation gets sexually immoral and they murder their babies, that is economically
suicidal.
A downturn.
Yeah.
So that's all I got.
You got it, man. Thank you for your call, Pro-Life, and thanks for holding on for me. Thank you.
God bless you.
God bless you. You have a good weekend. And our number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We got to take a break for Fox News. We will be right back.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo.
Sanders is the new press secretary. Fox News. We report, you decide.
This is Money Matters with Dave Petzo, KIDO.
Hello, welcome, and thank you for joining us. Big, long block. We've got a good 15, almost 20 minutes till the end here. No breaks. We're going to talk. Hopefully you are going to join us at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. If you prefer email, that's fine. It's dave@petzofinancial.net. Now, they don't pop up all the time, so it's best if you call, certainly with a more limited time frame. And hopefully you will. It'd be great to fill this last 20-minute block here with your phone calls and, you know, whatever's on your mind. You know, I told you what's on my heart and what's on my mind is, you know, just all this overall overwhelming anxiety that we feel that gives us bad investment decisions upon reflecting that this is not the way the great investors invest ever. They never have. You know, we quote their great quotes, their great wisdom just spills out. None of it is talking about how to buy, and sell. It's always about our behavior. Always. Isn't that interesting? Oh, great guru over here. Tell me about investing. And they give you this magic quote that just hangs in the air and hangs in the universe for all time about behavior. Isn't that interesting? It's not all the noise. It's not. It's how we behave. Control. What we watch, what our inputs are. Yeah, we're human. But we don't always have to act that way. Our number is 580-KIDO. Let's go to Josh. Josh, thanks for calling. Go ahead, please.
Hey, yeah, I was just curious. When it comes to investing, is there too much diversification? Can we be over diversified? Is there some type of balance formula that we want to go with? Because I got some extra money, and I'm really not sure where I should put it.
Yeah.
I've got CDs going. You know, I've got some mutual funds going. I've got a couple stock funds going. I got money sitting in, you know, my checking and savings account. So how much diversification is too much?
Good, great question, as a matter of fact. First of all, you can actually over-diversify, Josh, even within, you know, you have so many different stocks that you have really no point, okay? You have the market, so you might as well buy the market, right? Because you're not tracking any of those. So that would be over-diversified where you just, I don't even know what these things are doing, right? So you can have that, okay? There's also, you know, where because the easiest thing in the whole wide world is to collect stocks, and then you never sell, right? You just collect them. Oh, that looks really good. And you look at it and you go, that's really cool, and you buy it. And then that's it. That's the last you really ever look at it or really, really think about it and dig into it. So people collect stocks. It's easy to do. But when it comes to investing overall, and what you're talking about is can you over-diversify by having the cash and some gold and some real estate, right? All these different pockets, if you will, of what we classically would call diversifying amongst asset classes, right? That's what you're...
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. And then here's my answer to that, okay? If you have a fairly secure job, nobody has a totally secure job. I guess I do because, you know, I've done this for a long time and all of my clients won't fire me at the same time. Okay.
Right.
Right. So but I'm not secure in, in 35 years, I don't know what I'm going to make. Right. You know, I don't know. I don't have that security. But over time that gives you more security. So you start in a different place that you wind up. But let's say you have a job that you're fairly secure in, that you're not going to get laid off tomorrow, or isn't chicken and feathers all the time. So you probably have too much money sitting in your checking account, quotes, savings account, earning nothing. Nothing. That's not smart diversification. That's a bad idea. You should be earning more on that. So for most people, they have way too much money sitting in cash, sitting at checking and savings, way too much. Makes no sense. None. But they feel comfortable or whatever with it. And I'm just simply saying, you're asking this great question about diversification. So the answer is, I don't care if you're a little uncomfortable. Get uncomfortable and do the right thing. You know, it isn't easy to get up off the couch or out of bed in the morning and go work out. It's not comfortable, but people do it. And it's not easy to take money out of savings and checking if you've been doing that for 30 years. But people do it. You can do it. And so you do it. And then all of a sudden, it's a comfortable thing. But what I'm saying is if you have ample cash flow coming in, you have excess cash flow every month, why do you need 2 years' worth of income that you're not going to need, earning nothing? You don't. So get that money moved. Now, you always want to have an extra $5,000 because the car breaks down, the refrigerator goes, you need a new furnace, and that stuff should never, ever be put on credit. Okay?
Okay, great. Appreciate it. Thank you.
You got it, Josh. Thank you. You have a great day.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And, of course, I'm going to add one more thing. I don't know what gold does. I just don't know. I don't get it. Okay? I just have to admit, I don't get it. when people say, you can have a little bit of gold. I go, why? Why? I mean, you say, well, if everything goes to heck in a handbasket, you got it. Okay, so how much should that be? People say, well, you know, 5, 10%. Well, what does that cover my other 95%? What is that going to do? Right? I don't know how to plan for that. It doesn't make any sense. So he said, well, then you do it more significantly. So now I'm supposed to put 25% of my money into something that, if I can go back to my story earlier of the Dow from 800 to 21,000. Gold was at 800 at the same time, by the way. It's at 1,200. Why would I do that? And it didn't produce anything. Anything. No dividends. No interest. Nothing. Nothing. So it doesn't, you know, that kind of diversity. That's why I think you can be over diversified. All right. Our number, 580-5436, 580-KIDO. Hopefully you have a question. Give us a call. Again, we're going straight to the end of the program today. And I've got an email from actually last week. Yeah, it was last week, maybe the week before. Dave, I heard you say this morning that no one should own bonds today. I'm sure this is out of context, so should a balanced portfolio for a retired couple in the early 70s contain any bonds? Fabulous question. And yes, a bit out of context. What I'm saying is I don't think people should own 10-year treasuries with 2% interest rates at all today. I don't. Not when you're trying to draw income, cost of living adjusted, for the rest of your life. Let's suppose we're following the 4% rule. Okay, what's the 4% rule? You can take 4% of your investment capital out, cost of living adjusted, each year, 3% increase, and about 90% of the time you won't run out, according to the Monte Carlo simulations, which of course are ridiculous and broken. Why do I say they're ridiculous and broken? Because they also have in this magic formula, which is classically about a 60% stock, 40% bond, they're showing interest rates that were much higher. You can't get a 5% treasury bond today. You can't. You cannot get that. But the simulator simulates those kinds of returns. And I don't care if you run a billion calculations instead of just a mere million. If the data going in is faulty, it doesn't really matter how many calculations you run. You have faulty conclusions. And it's really simple. This is, doesn't take much more than, you know, common sense. You don't have to be an investment professional or a mathematician to say, if I'm supposed to put 30 or 40% of my portfolio in something that's guaranteed not to earn more than 2.25%, but I'm supposed to take out 4 and increase that income, I'm expecting an awful lot from the other investments, more than they've ever delivered before in history. Maybe I should do something different. My point being, if you want to own a 2% treasury, it better be a tiny amount. A tiny amount. If you're going to pull out 4%. We need to do something different in bond world. Way different. We need to figure out how we can get more income from our stocks, from everything else. Real estate, REITs, real estate investment trusts, pouring their dividends in. We need to be looking at other categories of bonds. What about high-yield bonds? Those are junk bonds. Those are scary. And I don't think they're a bargain right now, but they have been great as a tool to use instead of treasuries. Fabulous. Fabulous. That's why I don't think they're a bargain right now, because they've gone up so much. We've got floating-rate notes. They're not guaranteed to never move. They just rarely move. They don't move much. It's a pool of bank loans. You're not going to get paid a lot, but at least I can get 4% on them. And if interest rates rise, I'll get more. But that's pretty cool for a little bit of money. But what I'm saying is we've got to change our asset allocation, not because we twist in the wind and we try to time things, but when the ground conditions change, we have got to be addressing that. We can't cling like academics do to some faulty model of 60% stocks and 40% bonds and say that's going to work. when your grandmother, who didn't get through ninth grade, knows it won't work? Because you can't take out four and increase it each year if you're only getting two. But the academics cling. But this is what we know. This is what we learned. And oh, my. And so we've got to start thinking and rethinking. And I'm not saying that we can't buy treasuries if they're at 5 or 6% and put some in a portfolio. We can and will. But we've got to look for different sources. And right now, the greatest source is dividends. It's also the greatest income story that there ever has been. Ever. Growing streams of income is exactly what the market has done. At three times the rate of inflation, by the way, for the last 50 years. 50 years. Not 5 minutes, like everybody thinks. And I don't know what the market's going to do next week. But here's what I'll bet you dollars to donuts happens over the next month, quarter, and year. The great corporations of the world, regardless of the price of their shares in the market, will increase their income to their shareholders. That's what they will do. They'll keep paying income. I know you probably get tired of me telling the Procter & Gamble story, but the reason I do that is not to have you own Procter & Gamble. And by the way, I don't. I do. I own it in mutual funds somewhere. And I've owned it on and off many times. But the reason I like to talk about Procter & Gamble instead of a Google, or, and we talk Apple, of course, but it's a soap company. A soap company. This isn't, I had to get onto Google early. I've got to get into Facebook IPO, which was a disaster. Better to buy it afterwards, right? This is a story that of a company that's been around for over 100 years. They make soap. They have increased their dividend 70 years in a row. In 1970, they paid 1 cent per share per quarter. They now pay just shy of 70 cents per share per quarter. A 70-fold increase. 70-fold increase in income. What did I just tell you about their stock price? All you need to know. Why would it matter if you had a building sitting there? If you had a box that increased your income 10% a year? 70 years in a row. Would you even look up the price of your box? Would you care? If so, why would you care? But you see, it's not Procter & Gamble. It's overall, collectively, the great corporations of the world consistently do this. Johnson & Johnson, for what, 50 years, I think, they've increased their dividends. But once in a while, a great company like GE stumbles and cuts their dividend. What about that, Dave? That's why we're diversified. That's why. Because collectively, it works. And to really try to think about this and how we have to change our thinking for income. Why do we care about price so much? I'll tell you why. We think of income, like how much money is in our bucket. So, and that's true if you're at the bank. So you have money in your bucket. And let's just, you know, visualize a bucket, you know, just a pail, right, of money. If that pail goes down, say it's got, it's down a quarter of the pail is empty, I'm going to get less. That's what the bank says. If you have $100,000 in a bank, you get more interest than you do if you have $75,000. Now, let's completely turn everything on its head. Procter & Gamble, trading at $90 a share, it goes to $75. What happens to its dividend, its income? Nothing, except for every May, of course, because every May for 70 years, they've increased it. What happened in 2008 and 2009? They increased it. But you say, but the price went down. Yeah. Why do you care? Because they tell me I'm supposed to. All those dancing people on TV tell me with their hair on fire that I'm supposed to be caring about that or hedging it or buying an equity indexed annuity because it's a casino. Income for life. Increasing faster than the rate of inflation for all of your life. That's exactly what it's done. Again, just to reiterate, you want to run around with your hair on fire? Or do you want to listen to the...